Welcome to Start With This, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Jeffrey Craner and me, Joseph Fink. This is the show where we get you making stuff, one simple assignment at a time. Start with this. Perfection is for assholes.
Art is hard. Starting is hard. If you want to start somewhere, you can start with this. You can start with this.
The title of this episode is a quote from the great New York performance artist Taylor Mack, and I think it is a useful one to keep in mind when making art. Now, I am not here to tell you that you shouldn't strive to make your art as perfect as it can be. The title of this episode is not a perfect encapsulation of the ideal artistic process, but then you know what we think about perfection, right? The truth is that oftentimes done is better than perfect. The truth is that perfect doesn't really exist in any objective way. The truth is what makes a work of art perfect is not the artist, but the impossible alchemy between artist, work, and any person who experiences that work. I haven't explained myself perfectly, I know, but I'm Joseph Fink, here with Jeffrey Craner. Let's get started. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Joseph.
Yeah, I assume probably we'll edit most of that out, but speaking of a lack of perfection, I stumbled real hard through the reading of that introduction.
I love the, I just had a conversation with another podcaster recently when we were talking about editing conversational shows, and I started editing the horror movie podcast, Random Number Generator Horror Podcast number 9 that I do with Cecil Baldwin, and it's amazing how much imperfection there is in the way that I speak. And I'm sure Grant, who edits this podcast, knows just how imperfectly we all speak because he edits this every single week. But I've just now taken up that mantle for this other podcast. And I realized just how many like spring lawnmower starts of conversation I have where I start a conversation with, yeah, but I, and then I can cut all of that out, and then I sound really articulate or partially articulate now once I've done some editing on it. And Grant, every time we listen to these episodes back after Grant's had his turn with them, we sound super sharp with very few uhs and likes and you knows. It's pretty great.
So Jeffrey, I have a question for you. Does perfect exist in art? And if so, what does it mean?
I'm going to say no. I often use the phrase to describe something that I really adored on multiple levels, meaning I found it really just a fulfilling experience. Plus, as an artist myself, I really recognized and appreciated the craft of what it is. And so when those two things sort of come together for me, I often describe things as near perfect. There's this, it feels like the highest compliment to give something, that it is so close to perfect as a piece of art. But in saying that, I really recognize that that's my experience with it, that that is my feeling that I had on that day and that moment with that work of art. So the mood I was in when I watched that film really dramatically affected how perfect that film may or may not be. That maybe if I'm in a cranky mood, I'm more like, ah, that's a stupid device. Ah, this dialogue is so stilted. Although in a more clear-headed, calmer moment, I might sit there and think, wow, this clipped dialogue actually keeps the pace up. I really appreciate this really bizarre device that the director or the writer has used. So I think, because art is an experience between artist and audience, perfection is going to waver so much on people's moods, people's state of mind at any given time. So to say something is perfect is really, really difficult to assess.
Yeah, I think of perfection like perfect is just inherently not an objective measure. Nothing is perfect without an observer, and I'm using perfect in the common term. There might be definitions of perfect in mathematics or science that I don't know about that are, in fact, objective descriptions. But what I'm talking about here is the common usage of perfect, and that's, to me, it's like describing food as delicious or a person as lovable. Food can be delicious to me, a person can be lovable to me, and a piece of art can be perfect for me. But those are all words that mean nothing without the observer. They can't exist objectively. And so in that sense, they don't exist in many ways. Like, I think about, you know, I've written on the notes here, is Shakespeare perfect? I've also written Ulysses. These are Shakespeare and the novel Ulysses are these things that are kind of inherently seen as important foundations of the canon. But I personally don't like Shakespeare's plays. I don't enjoy them. So what does it mean if they're perfect, but I don't enjoy them? Like, what does that mean? And similarly, Ulysses, I don't think it would take very long to find a number of people who have bounced off of Ulysses and found it boring or confusing or just not for them. So what does that mean if Ulysses is perfect, but they found it boring?
I think that perfect often takes the form of just a hyperbolic comment. You use the example of delicious or lovable. And, you know, oftentimes we'll say something like, oh, he's just the best. He's just a delight, the best person. And I think perfect kind of fills that in. And in the case of things like Shakespeare and Ulysses, we're adding this idea that these are part of Western academic canon to it too, that for just, you know, in the case of Shakespeare, for centuries held his work up as sort of the standard by which we craft the English language and the way we tell stories. And obviously not every piece of art written after Shakespeare is done exactly like Shakespeare, but it is the sort of the touchstone, the base point at which we, you know, spin off everything else. And so once we sort of established that just culturally, you sort of have to say that this is perfect. If you're going to base an entire religion around a guy named Jesus, you have to admit that, like, there's some level of perfection that you're having to attain to be Christ-like or what have you. And so it's the same thing in literature and in art. Once you say that this is canon and the starting point by which all Western canon comes from, then yes, we can't say that it is flawed in any way. So I think that's partially where that comes from. The longer something is held to that high esteem, the harder it is to avoid the word perfect.
What are your feelings on the phrase, done is better than perfect?
Oh, I love that phrase. I have never said those exact words in that order, but I very often say done is better than perfect. In cooking, that comes up quite a bit. You really don't have a choice in cooking. You just have to know that it's perfect. You can't just, you know, in writing, I can keep reworking a chapter over and over or an episode over and over again until I get it right. If I'm cooking a steak, there's a point of no return where you say, well, this is done. And anything more that I work on with this, it will only make it worse. And so done is better than perfect is really nice. It's a relief as a writer to get done with something, to achieve something. In your intro, you mentioned that you don't want to avoid working toward perfection. You want to keep making your work more perfect or better. So just finishing a first draft isn't totally done, but achieving that without having to think every word as I type it, as it comes out of my fingers, has to be perfect in structure and in form and in usage. So yeah, done is better than perfect is excellent to me.
Yeah, to me, because all work is going to have flaws, because perfect art doesn't exist, you can always find things to fix in the work that you're creating, and you will always find more. There's the old joke that that's not really a joke, it's just the truth of what happens, which is when you get a novel published and you get the final copy, the like copy that's being sold in stores, and you open it, always the very first page you open to will have a typo on it every time. There's always something more that can be fixed. And so I think it's very easy, if you're not careful, to be sucked down that wormhole of, I can't release this until nothing is left to be fixed, but there's always something to be fixed, so I can't release this. And I think this happens to people who have never started their careers. You know, I think there's a lot of people who are afraid of taking that leap into the arts because of this exact thing, because they're like, well, I want to make a big splash with my first novel, but I've been working on it for 30 years and it's still not perfect. And so they just never finish it because they're constantly looking for that. And I think it happens with people whose careers have already started, who are like, you know, they've gotten a few things out and then they just hit this point where they're like, well, I want the next one to be perfect. And then that's where you get these things where people haven't released anything for 15 years. And it's because they go down this rabbit hole where they kind of forget that done is better than perfect. But I wanted to explore the opposite of that, which is, does that phrase let us off the hook for bad work? And if not, what is the balance to strike between done is better than perfect and a quote from the writer and cult leader L. Ron Hubbard? This is something he actually said about the pretty terrible pulp novels that he churned out early in his career, which is first draft, last draft, get it out the door. Where is the middle ground between those two?
I think about prolific creators. So somebody like Stephen King is a pretty great example of a very, very prolific writer. And there are so many great Stephen King short stories and novels out there. Almost all of them I would classify as imperfect in some form or fashion. I think we've talked before about, you and I both sort of agree that his endings are a little bumpy on the landing oftentimes. But the fact is, there's so much of his work that I truly enjoy. And there are some of his works that I don't know that I've ever read anything that I just absolutely loathe. If I did, I just stopped it right away and just moved on to something else. But there is a lot of his work that I have finished that I just don't remember at the moment I set it back down. And that's maybe on him, that's maybe on me. But the fact that he's continually creating things means that he's going to have these moments where he hits on all cylinders, where he's going to really, really find something that is a connective story. There's also the very famous anonymous guy on Twitter, Drill, who the Drill tweet is a very common quote on Twitter. He's very funny. His tweets are hilarious. I can think of several off the top of my head that I really, really love. And I remember seeing his stuff retweeted a lot, and it's got tens, if not hundreds of thousands of retweets on some of these. And I think, how do you just get this good at being so pithy and so funny? And then I started reading his timeline of tweets, and he has a lot of tweets that are just unimpactful for me in every way. But he is prolific. He is constantly making things. And so I think there is some sense of, we say on the show all the time, and I think most writers would agree, that you just always have to be writing. And I would say you always have to kind of be pushing your stuff out to other people too, whether that's a writer's group, or whether that's Twitter, or whether that's making podcasts, or whether that is doing a blog or publishing short stories or whatever it is you have the capability of doing, is keeping those things flowing. Because I think you will get a better sense of what is a good draft of a story, whether or not your first draft is your last draft, probably not. But you kind of get a sense of where, you know, what it is you're comfortable with. And the more things you have, the more likely you are to hit on something that really grabs a lot of people.
Yeah, for me, the answer to this question is about having a process, about sort of making an agreement with yourself going in. Over the years, I've developed a process that works for me. And when I say a process, I mean I do a first read where I'm looking for this, and then I do a second read where I'm looking for this, and then I do a few pretty specific technical look-throughs just to make sure, for instance, I'm not using some common words I use too much, things like that. And then I do a third read that's like this, and then I'm done. And it might not always be exactly like that, but I go into the process knowing exactly how many read-throughs of a work I'm going to do and exactly what each of those read-throughs is going to be for, what I'm looking for in each of those read-throughs. And having that really helps find that balance of, I am making a good faith effort to make the work as close to perfect as I can, but by going in with that agreement, I'm putting a limit to it. I'm saying, after these, even though I'm sure if I did another read-through, I could find some sentence to tweak to make it just a little better, but I'm calling it done. I'm officially calling this one done, and I'm moving on to the next thing, because otherwise I'll be lost here forever.
Are you able to say off the top of your head what specifically in those read-throughs you're looking for?
Yeah, it's interesting. So let's talk about, I mean, it kind of varies between like novels or Night Vale episodes or episode. It also varies of like, is it something I'm writing with you or is it something I'm writing alone? Because when I'm writing with you, I tend to, for instance, share it with you a little earlier in the process because I want to give you a chance to fix, to like see some structural stuff before I really start getting into like fine detail. But like with a Night Vale episode, I do one silent read that's really just big picture. I'm just trying to get a sense of like, does this story make sense? Is there plot holes? Is there anything I should add? Like, does it feel right in a really general way? Does this feel like a good episode? Then I'll start doing, I do three out louds. Generally what I do is I do a first out loud that's, again, looking pretty big picture, fixing stuff. You know, that's generally where I catch stuff like, oh, this sentence doesn't make any sense as I wrote it. Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm hearing that the words don't actually fit together. That's generally where I'll catch that. Then I do my word searches where I like search for things like the word vast is a word I tend to overuse. So I just do a search. Then I do a second out loud that's a little more granular. It's a little more like looking for, is there a sentence that fundamentally works grammatically, but maybe it could just be prettier or more interesting, or this joke could have a less cliched punchline, something like that. Generally, after those two out loud reads, I'll send it to you. And it really varies. Some of it, you'll have bigger notes. Some of it, you'll be like, I changed this one word. I like it. And it really varies. And then usually before sending to the team, I'll do one last out loud. And that one is really hyper detailed. It's just looking for, is there anything I missed? Is there any last little tiny tweaks that I should make that just somehow Jeffrey and I both missed? So it's like each read through tends to get more and more detailed and really looking for smaller and smaller fixes.
When you start writing, I don't know if you have this as something that you will talk about later in the episode, but when you start writing and as you're writing something, how much of that idea of perfection filters into your brain while you write? Do you get into the sense of like, this story's no good, or I really need to get these facts right, or this, I need to make sure this plot makes sense here, or I need to describe this character more. Does that slow you down ever? Are you able to kind of just write straight through and worry about it in post?
I'm kind of, I feel like in the middle ground between, I've definitely heard of writers who like their first drafts look almost nothing like their final drafts. Like their first drafts are just sort of an explosion of words. They're just trying to pile up material that they'll then like shape. And ultimately the thing they shape doesn't look much like the kind of just scattershot of words. And I'm not like that. My rough drafts mostly look quite a lot like my final drafts in the big picture. I think if you look at the details, you'll see the major differences. But I do try to like think through the shape of things. I rarely, for instance, leave like a blank where I'm like, oh, I'll fill this in later. I don't know. I definitely try to make the first draft as good as I can make it, but I also don't worry too much because I know it's going to go through this process. So I definitely rarely put down a thing where I'm like, I think this is bad, but I'll fix it. I rarely do that. But there's lots of stuff where I'm like, this probably isn't quite there, but it's okay. It'll be edited.
Yeah.
I wanted to think about, are there other ways to define perfection for art, for writing, besides this book is perfect, this podcast is perfect? And I have a list of them we could go through just quickly.
Sure.
What I wanted to think about is rather than thinking about an individual piece as perfect, is it possible to think about seeking perfection as a series of pieces, or in fact, just looking at an entire career? Is that one way of looking at perfection?
I think so. I mean, it sort of varies, right? When we talk about, say, a writer that might, a fantasy novelist, right? Like an N.K. Jemisin writing a trilogy of works. Or when we talk about somebody who has a prolific podcaster like Roman Mars or something like that. And you say, well, he's got all of 99% Invisible and what Trump Can Teach Us About Con Law. And he's also headed up Radiotopia programs, things like that. You can sort of look at it as a whole and just talk about that level of perfection. And so it thins out the imperfections and you can sort of look at it as a monolith, as just an entirety of something. But even then, I think for me, the perfection lies in the imperfection. It lies in all of the subtle flaws of language and the subtle flaws of structure. It lies in the idea that there are lots of different textures to have here. I think when I'm writing something, I can sometimes get bogged down in the perfection of a single sentence or just a single metaphor or set of adjectives to describe something to think this isn't right, this isn't okay, this can be so much tighter, this can be so much better. But that's not looking at the big picture. Every sentence, every line of dialogue should have some importance to it. It should be moving something forward. But every sentence does not need to contain critical information to the story. Every sentence does not have to be a perfectly flowery worded statement about how gorgeous somebody's hair is or something along those lines. We need sentences and we need all of this padding and space in our stories to be able to create a tone, to create a mood, and to create pace so that we have slow moments and fast moments, so we have soft moments and hyper-stylized moments and things like that. And I think when we look at it over the course of the career, we can see all the ups and downs and all those little imperfections in there really are about the pace of watching somebody grow as an artist and change as an artist and our relationship to them. So inside what may look like a perfectly structured, a perfectly carved monolith out of stone, you know, you see all the cracks and fissures if you get up close to look at it.
This leads well to the next version of perfect I wanted to consider, which is whether a single work can be perfect in that it is a perfect reflection of a flawed human. For this, the thing that pops to my head is the work of Leonard Cohen. And I certainly wouldn't say that the poetry and songs of Leonard Cohen are perfect, but I do think in their flaws, they create this perfect reflection of the human who created them, which is, you know, Leonard was very open about being a flawed human being. He created art that kind of dug into those flaws, that really looked at the cracks in himself. And I'm wondering if that can be a way of pursuing perfection, is to really dig into reflecting the flaws in yourself in creating flawed work.
There's a quote that I think about a lot, and I was trying to find it before we started recording, and I just cannot find, I couldn't find it in the books that I have here, but I believe it was John Lahr, who was a theater critic, and he described Angels in America, Tony Kushner's two-part play, Angels in America. First part is Millennium Approaches, and the second part is called Perestroika, and in his review of Perestroika, he says this is the far messier but far more interesting of the two plays. And I always loved that assessment. I like the idea that something is messy. And he describes that it is less well edited. The pacing is sort of off. It has a lot of ideas just crammed into dialogue. So sometimes that dialogue is stilted or difficult to parse. But in the fact that this man stuffed his work so full of really, really vibrant, really exciting concepts and some really deep analyses of life and death and heaven and hell and earth and living with AIDS, that I think you could find a level of perfection in absolute imperfection of craft. That, as Tony Kushner himself has said, that he sort of imagines his works like lasagna, in that you're trying to stuff it so full of so many layers of flavor. When you cut it open and you take a square out and you set it on a plate, you hope that it doesn't slide apart. But very often it does completely fall apart on the plate. However, that's okay because it's still lasagna and it's delicious. And I think that there's something about those imperfections that can really express, I think, maybe the rapid workings of our mind and the way that we can't fully incorporate all of our ideas into single pithy statements. But I find that truly interesting. I really like messy things, particularly if they can be under 3 hours.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, we recently, when Hamilton was put up on Disney, we rewatched it. We had seen it in the theater way back when, and rewatching it, it's interesting because for me, that show is easily 40 minutes, more like an hour too long. That second act just has so much stuff in it that I really feel like could probably go to the betterment of that show. There's just a lot of stuff that doesn't really fit the story or just goes on too long. But I do wonder if Hamilton would have had the same impact if it was a tight 90-minute or 2-hour play or musical that it had as this over 3-hour monolith, if something about the kind of messy length of it contributed to what a huge impact it had. I don't know, but it's entirely possible that if it had been more pared down, it just wouldn't have had that same splash. Going through this list again, I want to think about maybe perfection as being perfect for a moment in the world, understanding that perfection is not objective and not a timeless measure, but it can be a chemical interaction between time, place, and art. I think here about the work you used to do with the neo-futurists, this idea of making theater for this specific moment in time.
Well, you mentioned Hamilton, and I think that's a really great example of a work that feels so very specific to 2015. And we're still enjoying it, right? The re-release of Hamilton on Disney Plus this year was certainly a thing that I think grew its audience much larger than we thought it could be grown. Because in 2015, it felt like Hamilton was the only musical that had ever been written. And then here we are 5 years later, and it feels like that again. But what's come with it in 2020 is much more discussion, public discussion about the imperfections of its creator, the imperfection of the idea in general, to go back to this well of telling stories about slavers, basically. And there's a lot in there to be broken down, to be criticized, to be critiqued. And I think that the love we all felt for a lot of fans felt for Lin-Manuel, I see that hasn't eroded at all, really, in the grand scheme of things. But I do see a lot more people that are much more critical of him as an artist and as a person. So, yeah, I think the moment changes all the time. Time affects perfection always. A perfect joke really is only the joke told amongst friends in a small group that is so well-timed, usually accidentally, that everyone laughs so hard. And that joke will probably never be as good again. Maybe 25 years later when you suddenly remember it and you think, oh, those great times. But then the experience is not overt laughter. It's like warm nostalgia. So yeah, writing for time, writing for the moment is so, so very important. And when we worked doing the shows for the neo-futurists, when we would write those plays, we always had to consider that we are who we are, we're where we are, we're doing what we're doing, the time is now. And the most important thing about all of your plays had to be your relationship to the audience.
This leads right there. Sorry, I'm pushing through these because I have gone quite a bit over our usual time, but you know, we're not perfect.
Sure.
I'm just going to read this one out, which is, you know, perfection might be what is perfect to you right now, where you are in your life. Many times work will meet you at the right time and it will seem perfect. And if you try to revisit it later, it will be disappointing. But that doesn't make it less perfect. It was still perfect for you right then at that time. And also that works that you don't like might have just met you at the wrong point in your life. I think about, you know, right out of college, I was feeling kind of unsure of what to do with myself. And I went and did a language immersion program in Italy for a bit and was just kind of there and feeling a little lost. And I read Dave Eggers' You Shall Know Our Velocity, which is a novel about a couple American guys kind of wandering the world and being unsure of what to do with their life. And at the time, I loved that book so much. It felt like such a perfect reflection of what I was feeling. And I remember a couple years back, I picked up that book again and read a couple pages and instantly was like, you know what, this is just not going to be a good experience because it wasn't who I was anymore and it wasn't going to reflect that anymore. And it ultimately was only going to be disappointing if I tried to read that book.
It's the danger of perfection too, right? The idea that perfection becomes a form of nostalgia, that perfection becomes the way things always were before, that when you feel like something is perfect, you hold everything to that level of perfection. But that perfection is in the past. Like the only perfection, going back to your earlier question about thinking about a whole career, thinking about the arc of your whole life. And obviously, you will never be perfect, but there is something to the idea of achieving growth more than perfection in your writing. And by holding on to this Dave Eggers book, yeah, it does hit you at a moment in your life when you are a little bit uncertain about what you're going to do next. And so a book that features people uncertain about what they're going to do next is going to connect so well with you. Hopefully 10, 15 years later, you're not still reading this book thinking, yes, this is still where I'm at. I still get this. Not to say you don't have your own problems now, but they're hopefully different, that they're ever changing, that you're always sort of moving forward.
The last form of perfection I wanted to consider is just that the act of creation can be a type of perfection, that the constant creation of imperfect works, that process of creating imperfection, you can perfect the process of creating imperfection to kind of make a tongue twister out of it. If it works for you and it has results, if you make stuff that you like out of it, then that process is perfect for you, even if what you're making isn't perfect.
That's absolutely true.
So I just want to end on kind of two questions, I guess. The first is, does perfect matter?
I think it matters internally. I think it matters that you want something to be the best it can be. And by imagining that there is a perfectness to achieve, I think that can be very helpful, because you're just setting your sights on something just so high up in the air that you're just aiming as high as you possibly can. But that perfection is invisible, because you if you had to out loud define what perfection is, you wouldn't be able to do it. So the peak of this mountain you're climbing is in the clouds. You don't know where it is, but you can assume there is a peak. Everything has a peak to it. The mountain goes up, it has to come back down. There must be an apex of that hill. You just can't see it. I think it's very useful. I think perfection does matter as an internal barometer of an internal aim for what you're trying to achieve. I think it's only a problem. Perfection for me is only a problem when you assume something has to be perfect, when you're trying to perfect other people, when you're telling people they fall short of this perfection. That seems counterproductive to me.
I guess that kind of answers my final question, which is it wrong to want perfection? Or in other words, is perfection, in fact, for assholes?
Only if you externalize it as an aim for other people. Or I think if you're being an asshole to yourself, if you are telling yourself you failed by not making something perfect. You want to aim for perfection, but you have to understand that you won't achieve it.
This seems like a perfect time to take a break. When we come back, we will have your consume and create assignments. Stick around. Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously, May 11th, 2021, the first 10 years, two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, The Halloween Moon, my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. Even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books. And we're back. Let's get to your assignments. I have your consume assignment. This is the famous short story by the writer Shirley Jackson, The Lottery. You've probably heard of it. You might have even read it. If you haven't, this is a great time to read it. It's a wonderful short story. I think it wouldn't be hard to make an argument for this story as the perfect short story. It is certainly one of the most famous short stories in the canon. And yet, by Jackson's own telling in an essay she wrote about the writing of it, the story was essentially a first draft. Other than some minor spelling and grammatical fixes, the story as it stands was the story as she initially wrote it. So is the perfection of The Lottery an accident, or the outcome of years of training as a writer, or is it not actually perfect? Could the answer be some combination of these things? And do these questions even matter compared to this question? Did the story mean something to you? The Lottery is available in a lot of places for free online. We'll link to one of them in the show notes, or you can just Google the name and it'll come up.
Great. I will give you your create assignment for this week. Think of your perfect work. Just sort of imagine what your perfect story is, the one you someday want to make, whether that's a podcast or whether that's the Great American Novel or it's a film or whatever it is. start with coming up with the perfect title for this work, or as close to perfect as you can get in. Let's say, I don't know, top yourself out at like 58 minutes of brainstorming and refining, but come up with the title that you think will draw people in, maybe has a secret meaning or relates to the very core of the work, something that sounds like the perfect work that you're wanting to create. Give yourself this hour, and the remaining 2 minutes of this hour, try to come up with two more names, two more titles of this work. Try to make them as good as you can in just 2 minutes. So you've spent a good portion of this hour coming up with the one single perfect title, but only give yourself the last 2 minutes to come up with two more titles. Don't give yourself any more time. Try to make them as perfect as you can in that limited amount of time. Now just share, go to our members forum and just share all three titles of your great masterpiece, but don't indicate which one is the one you think is perfect. See what people think about which title sounds like the perfect title of the perfect work. Share that on Twitter, share that with your family, put it on our members forum. Let's see where you go from there. And in fact, if you come up with a good enough title, maybe just use that as a jumping off point to start that work. Go for it.
That's all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and find maybe future collaborators. Who knows? Plus, you'll be able to ask the two of us follow-up questions about this and future episodes and gain exclusive access to episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is just $5. Do you know what still costs $5 these days? Nothing. Nothing still costs $5 except membership and supporting the show. We can't wait to see what you're working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It is produced by Jeffrey Craner, editing by Grant Stewart, and mixing by Vincent Cachione. The theme song is by me, Joseph Fink. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more of their music at cagedanimals.net. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thank you for listening. Now, Jeffrey, I forgot, the imperfect being that I am, to put down a quote, but I think the title is itself a quote. The great Taylor Mack once said, "Perfection is for
changing your light bulbs regularly for no reason."
That is a perfect thing to do. Thanks so much, everyone.
From the creators of Welcome to Night Vale, Alice Isn't Dead, and Within the Wires comes a new Audible original. Unlicensed. In the outskirts of Los Angeles, where the cul-de-sacs and strip malls sprawl into the desert, two unlicensed private investigators scrape by on whatever small cases come their way. But when a teenage girl pleads for them to take the strangest case of their career, this unlikely pair, with no resources and no backup, will follow a trail of seemingly unconnected cases, which will lead them to a ransom, a murder, a mysterious wellness center, and a conspiracy that might go all the way to the governor.
It's important to catch small fires early. They don't stay small for long.
Unlicensed. Available now at audible.com/unlicensed.